If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, September 2nd, 2022. Of course, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by the future of video games, Blessing Adeoye Jr.
Tim, I've hit a point where my Friday energy is now determined by Thursday night trivia and how our team does in Thursday night trivia. So right now I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling all right.
Okay. I was hoping for feeling great, riled up.
Well, here's the thing, Tim, is that trivia, there's two rounds. There's two separate games of trivia in one night. And the first round, we were a man down because a certain person on our team went to the wrong bar for the second time out of five times.
One of these bars has to change their name.
Damn. You can't
two bars that are that close to each other should not have
the same name. Close to each other.
It's like a 10-minute drive.
I mean,
why are they both in the San Francisco area with the same name?
All right. Well, we were down.
And also, that sounds like you're. Well, what I'm hearing, you say this as a Blessing was gone, but I'm hearing it as Blessing is such an asset to the team that without him
we
couldn't do well.
We're all assets and pillars to the team. We all play an important role. Joey and I nailed the hot seat or hot corner question last night for baseball.
I was so happy that I nailed. There was a Premier League question. They asked which Premier League team or which two Premier League teams have won the most, like, I forget what it was, like championships that are located in the same city. And I was like, guys, it's Manchester. I said that with so much confidence. Deep down, I didn't really know. But Manchester sounded like the right answer, and I got that shit right.
Well, you know what? I'm proud of you guys, but you know what else I'm proud of, Les? The fact that this is Kind of Funny Games Daily, and each and every weekday right here live on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. For the last time, for now, we will return to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames next week. After that, who knows? I'm still experimenting, y'all. I'm trying to get the data. There's some analytics. There's some vibe checks going on. There's a whole bunch of things going on.
My vibe is that I like the YouTube vibes, man.
I do too.
YouTube chat has been chill. Like it's been a fun hangout thing. They've been giving us a lot of money in the YouTube chat.
It pops up
$5 to play a violin. $20 to call somebody a bitch. Like they're just in there throwing us money to do what. Yeah. Hey, that's them. That's YouTube chat. That's the energy that they're exuding out. And it's nice to be on this side of the, I guess, Kind of Funny audience, even though I know 90% of the people are from Twitch anyway. But like, I don't know. There's something cool about the YouTube energy.
I agree. And the thing is, again, we're experimenting. There's a lot of things that are yet to be decided. But I will say I'm feeling this. I like this. I do think that certain products work better in certain places. And I've been liking this week. I've been liking the talk showy vibe over here. While I still love the gameplay vibe over on Twitch right now that we got, Mike, Andy, and Kev, and Nick, and all them doing. But anyways, get into the weeds here. We'll keep you guys updated as things kind of continue. But next week, we are returning to twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames for the time being. But if live's not your thing, that's cool. youtube.com/kindoffunnygames is where you want to be. And if you like podcasts, guess what? Search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Games Daily, and we will be right there for you. If you want to support this show even more, going above and beyond, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames is where you want to go, where you can get the show ad-free. You get the exclusive post show that I heard is guaranteed to be a banger today. And also, you get to be a Patreon producer, just like Fargo Brady, who we appreciate so very, very much. Today's stories include new Cyberpunk 2077 announcements, the Quarry director teasing their next game, even more stuff. It's going to be great. I can't wait to talk about it. Remember, you can use our Epic creator code KINDAFUNNY anytime you're on the Epic Game Store, and it will help support us without costing you a single penny more. It's fantastic. And a little housekeeping. We're off next Monday. It's Labor Day, so we are going to take a tiny little break, and it's going to be good, and I need it, guys. I need need it real
Tim
bad.
Need it. I was having a conversation with Roger the other mm-hmm. day, and like we were talking about how hard of a worker you are, and like it got to a point where like me and him were just, you know, talking back and forth about, you know, cool things we got going on, kind of funny things that you talk about, all this stuff, and we were like, Tim's got to take a break, man.
I know. Tim's going to pass out.
Like, Tim's been sick.
I've been talking to Roger as well, and I feel like Roger had the sentiment that Tim doesn't work enough.
Yeah, Ron, so. I've heard Roger. Roger's like, yo, like, Tim's kind of a punk. And I'm like, you know what? I can't.
I don't like that Roger's playing both sides.
Yeah, Roger's playing both sides. Also, WB Buck in chat says, play the fucking violin, Bless. WB Buck only tipped $2. If you remember, I only play the violin for at least $5.
Damn.
Step that shit up, WB Buck. I need $3 more for you.
More housekeeping for you. Rocky Balboa in review is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunny. Honestly, it's a special in review. I think that y'all should check it out, if only for the first, like, opening like 20 minutes of us just kind of giving our thoughts on stuff. Like, it was like a really kind of oddly emotional in review, just kind of reflecting on in review as a whole and reflecting on kind of like what movies mean to us. And it kind of got really intimate. It was me and Sancho West for a while before Andy joined us. And it was a special moment in Kind of Funny history. It's an episode that I'm going to cherish for a very long time. So please go check that out. Today we're brought to you by ExpressVPN and Chime. I'll tell you about that later. Last bit of housekeeping I want to give you. We got a really cool week next week. There's some big deal stuff, including Blessing hosting the D23 games panel, which is going to be very exciting. And we're going to be live reacting to it. We don't know anything. We don't know what he's going to reveal there. He knows some things, but we're going to react to him telling us what these new things are next Friday when that happens. And then on Saturday, we're going to give you guys a double dose of live reactions. All of this will be on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames starting at 10 a.m. where we will react to the D23 Marvel Studios and the Lucasfilm panel, which should be very exciting. And then at noon, we're going to go right into the Ubisoft Forward event, where we will be reacting to that. So very exciting stuff all around.
Tim, before you continue, we got a super chat here from Sanchez, who gives us $20 and says, quick question, Bless. What player holds the top international goal scorer record and is the GOAT? Without looking it up, only a couple names come to mind.
Roy Kent,
of course, the GOAT. But also, it's either going to be Messi or it's going to be Ronaldinho. But if I had to commit to an answer, I'm going to say Messi, even though I feel like that might be wrong. Let me know, Sanchez, if I got that right.
Let him know. But while you do that, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 news stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Story number 1.
People in chat are saying Cristiano Ronaldo. Damn. I was close. I would have my third guess if I kept going. I would have my third guess.
Story number one. God of War Ragnarok gameplay footage shows off some new weapon abilities. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. A new God of War Ragnarok gameplay video has shown off some of the sequel's updated combat features for the first time. The Game Informer video includes footage of several new ways that Kratos can use his Leviathan Axe and Blades of Chaos to take on enemies. Lead combat designer Mir Sheth recently told the publication that one of Santa Monica Studios' internal philosophies is the idea that Kratos plays with his food, which is awesome. He explained, we tried to create systems you want to engage with that are fun, very playful, lots of different routes. And when we looked at the combat in the last game, we were like, we can push this further. We can find new toys and ways of playing with enemies and strategies. That's been the guiding principle more than anything else. Sheth said one way the sequel does this is by introducing a whole new suite of moves for Kratos, which are accessible via the triangle button. I need to stop the story right now for a quick tangent. They're talking about a whole new suite of moves for Kratos. Infamously at IGN, Nick Scarpino and Fran Mirabella and all of them decided for the original God of War 2, back on PS2, that for their preview of that game, instead of just previewing the biggest, most anticipated game at the time, like a normal group of people, they did a whole comedy sketch around it. Nick dressed up and played this really like shady character. And in it, he kept talking about Kratos' sweet new moves. He got sweet new moves. Look at all his sweet new moves. So the fact that here we are in 2022 and I'm reading a thing about a God of War 2 and they're talking about a new suite of moves, Nick Scarpino is somewhere in the world right now, and he's doing his dumb little Nick dance. Anyway, in 2018's God of War, pressing triangle either recalled the protagonist's axe, did nothing if it was already in his possession, or switched to the axe if Kratos had the Blades of Chaos equipped. Ragnarok's new triangle attacks are called weapon signature moves. Kratos can now infuse his weapons with ice or fire to deal elemental attacks called Frost Awaken and Whiplash, which can freeze or incinerate enemies respectively. Kratos can also use multiple new shields, including the Dauntless and Stonewall ones. By pairing at the last possible moment, the former can be used to unleash a smash attack that throws and stuns enemies. The Stonewall shield can't be used to parry, but it absorbs kinetic energy with every block it blocks, with every hit it blocks. Once fully charged, it can be banged into the ground to release a screen-wide pulse, which knocks approaching enemies off their feet. So some Black Panther action, kind of cool. Bless, what does this do for you?
So I've had a journey with this, Tim, where Game Informer earlier this week announced that they have God of War as their cover story for the month, right? And they've been doing this drip feed of, oh yeah, here's, you know, interviews, gameplay, new looks at God of War Ragnarok. And I've been trying to be a bit blackout on it. That's one of the reasons why, you know, I think one of the earlier days of the week when they first came out with some new gameplay stuff, I was like, okay, I could include this in KFGD, but I'm going to not, right? Because it's that level of new story where it's like, all right, you know, a little bit new gameplay. They're talking about what you can do with the triangle button. I don't know if that's headline worthy. I'm going to keep this in the pocket, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe we talk about it on PS I Love You. Maybe we don't talk about it. But for my own personal enjoyment of God of War, I was like, I'm going to be blackout because I don't necessarily need this information. This morning, and as the week has gone, right, there has been more and more of a drip feed of information and gameplay stuff. And now the stuff that we're looking at for God of War Ragnarok. And I broke, right? I was like, okay, cool. For the show, I'm going to watch the video. I'm going to see what the new gameplay changes are here. And watching this, my original thought was, oh, they're giving us crumbs. Like, certainly there's going to be way more to this. Certainly there's going to be a lot more deeper changes and wider changes. Like, they're just showing us crumbs to, like, try and hide what's beneath the surface. And as I started going through that thought process, I came around to being like, what if it is what it is? What if, like, in the theories that we've been throwing out for God of War Ragnarok on PS I Love You, where it's me, Greg, and Jaina, and we're talking about, oh, halfway through the story, I bet Kratos dies and you start playing as Atreus, right? Or maybe there's a twist and you pick up the hammer as Thor, or like, what if there's some big twist or big thing happening? Those have been the level of theories that we, and I think plenty of people who are fans and on the internet, have been throwing back and forth. What if God of War Ragnarok, what we're seeing is what we're getting? What if it's just a better God of War? Or like a God of War 2018 with a few more features in the combat?
You know, it's funny because I have been a little bit more blackout on this game than I traditionally am for things that I'm extremely excited for. I think it's just because, like, I know that this is going to be something that I love. And if I don't end up loving it, that's going to be a major disappointment, an unexpected disappointment, right? But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I am going in expecting a God of War 2018 too. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't expect this game to, like, change the game because they already did that. And I just want more of that. And I want that story to continue. And I want that gameplay to just be a little bit enhanced. Like, I don't really think that, unless they wow the hell out of me, like, I expect this game to just be more God of War. And that is an amazing thing because we don't get that much of it, right? Like, that is like, it was such a perfect experience that, like, just getting more of that is all I can really ask for. I feel like there is a very slim chance that I'm disappointed by this game, and there's a very slim chance that I am utterly blown away by this game, and I think that's okay.
I'm with you, but I guess for me, I want this game to blow me away, right? Because that has become my expectation for Sony Santa Monica and for God of War. And, you know, It's fascinating being in this place where God of War 2's biggest enemy right now might be God of War 2018. And this happens all the time when it comes to sequels of this ilk. I think even when I look at Breath of the Wild 2, I have the same thoughts of, all right, what are you going to do in Breath of the Wild 2 that shocks me and wows me and makes me into the biggest fan of this game ever in the way that Breath of the Wild did, because it came out of left field and exposed me to something new, right? Like, I look at it in almost a lesser way, but I think in a similar way as well, Fallout 3 to Fallout 4. Like, Fallout 4 comes through, and it's a great game, and I think Fallout fans really like that game, but there's this common sentiment of, but it's iterative, right? It's more of what I liked about Fallout 3, and that's not to the detriment of Fallout 4, but I do think that that makes the follow-up releases a little bit special. I think it's that, plus the idea of us having the Last of Us Part 2s of the world and the Metal Gear Solid 2s of the world that do come through and do throw in twists and throw in smart, you know, story directions that make those games stand as individual compared to what comes before. You know, in our Last is Part 1 versus Last is Part 2 episode of PS I Love You that we put out earlier in the week, one of the things, or maybe this was during our review, one of the things I mentioned this last week in all of our Last is Part 1 coverage is that the game stands so well as individual games, right? Like, Last is Part 1, Last is Part 2, they're not like Watch Dogs 1 to Watch Dogs 2 or Assassin's Creed 1 to Assassin's Creed 2, where a lot of those changes are iterative and, hey, how do we make this play smoother? How do we make this play better? How do we take advantage of what we set up in the original game to make the second game better? Last of Us 1 going into Last of Us Part 2, I feel like those stand so well as individual games where they both feel like they can be masterpieces in their very own right. And we can have a valid argument of, oh yeah, what's better between Last of Us Part 1 versus Part 2 because they are so different even though they're in the same franchise. God of War Ragnarok, or I'll say God of War 2018, feels like it can be one of those situations where God of War Ragnarok comes through and it exists as its own thing because there is some different direction, some different hooks, some different special thing about it that makes it what it is. And if it's just more God of War 2018, I'm with you that, like, that's not a bad thing, right? Because God of War 2018 was a fantastic video game, right? It's in my list of greatest of all time. It's that status. So if it's more of that, then that's not bad. But does it become less special if it's that?
Yeah, it's complicated. I think you're making a lot of good points. I don't know that I fully agree with all of them. And I think it's just that there's a couple things that I agree with you, but just a little slight variation, a little slight difference. Because I think the Fallout 3 to Fallout 4 thing is a little less apt because despite Fallout 3 being so beloved, even the people that love that game were like, not everything about it is perfect. It's just the things they liked about it, they really liked. But it's not like the shooting was great in that game. It's not like, you know, it's not like it was like the tightest thing ever, but there was so much about it that people loved. And then there was all the other games like New Vegas and all that. And then we get to 4. Whereas with God of War, people talk about it as a 10 out of 10. People talk about it as one of the best games of all time. And it's like, yeah, there's criticisms of it, but there's, I don't think that there's anything that's like, people are like, oh, they didn't nail this part or this part or this part. And like really what the game's all about, which is combat, presentation, and characters and story, right? So with those three things, the difference now jumping from the Fallout conversation to the Last of Us conversation, I think that Last of Us, the time between Last of Us 1 and Last of Us 2, and the fact that Druckmann was so intimately involved in both of them, whereas with God of War, it seems like Corey is taking a different kind of involvement like approach in all of it, that like I still feel like to us is a semi-mystery. Like, we know that he's involved. We know he's not the guy, but, like, we don't know the extent of it all. Yeah, exactly, exactly. But it's, like, I feel like...
he's not the lead director.
Which, like, I don't... How much is that going to affect what this is? And, like, maybe not, you know? And not necessarily saying that he needs to be the director for it to be able to do a Last of Us 1 and 2 type thing. I just think for that more direct comparison that you're talking about of both of them standing on their own, but also being a united front, I do think that I don't expect it to be in that same conversation because of those facts. And I could be wrong, and I hope that I am, but I think that there's just a slim chance of that being the case.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that goes back to my original thinking, right, of me having the moment this morning watching the trailer and going, oh yeah, this might be more iterative than I originally would even thought it would be, because it's only been 4 years since God of War 2018. In God of War Ragnarok, right, when we look at it, when we watch it, and when we think about its development, right, and the fact that it's also going to be a PS4 game, right, it's cross-generation, a lot of this game is probably being built on the bones of God of War 2018, as they should do as a studio, because you set up this thing, you spent time making this game, that is God of War 2018, you know, figuring out the mechanics, figuring out how to make combat good, figuring out how to make this game present well. They put in so much work to God of War 2018, oh yeah, they better make something that is built off the bones of that game, because that game played so well and it spent them a lot of time to make that. But that does lead to me going, okay, but what are you doing to make this one new, if you make this one feel fresh? And I know they're going to figure it out, right? Even if it's iterative, I think they're going to do whatever they need to make sure that this game feels better and this game feels like a true sequel. I will say, though, this gameplay trailer, the new mechanics they're introducing, I'm like, cool. You know, they don't get me excited. They don't necessarily do much for me. I think the new moves are neat. You know, I like the idea of playing with the suite of new moves. The ones that they're showing are neat, but they don't, you know, set my world on fire. I do like what they talk about in terms of, you know, play with your food, and we want to make sure, you know, combat feels fun in the way that you have that freedom to kind of experiment with how you go about combat and all that stuff. I think that stuff's great. I also think that's stuff that they did well in God of War 2018, right? I don't know if I wouldn't imagine that this is a brand new philosophy for them. And so I would love to see like more of the bigger new changes that they have for God of War Ragnarok. But also, I could wait until release, right? I'm at the place where I don't need to see more to be sold on this game. I'm ready to play this game. But yeah, the gameplay stuff they showed here, I think looks cool. Game looks good. Not setting my world on fire with the content, but I think it will when I get the final game in my hands.
I'm on the opposite, where like seeing this and having I replayed 2018 a little earlier than the rest of the PS I Love You crew, and having just played that and like watching this, I love just the way that they've designed like the battlefield here. It's way more diverse and dynamic, especially with like the levels that you're fighting on and stuff like that. You see Kratos like use the Blades of Chaos to pull himself up to a ledge and stuff like that. It looks more quick to like kind of go throughout the entire arena, which I like and I think is really cool. And I think for me personally, I think that's all they need to do. The 2018 stuff was already great. It's just adding a little bit more layer to it. To really improve it, because you know God of War 2 was also very beloved. God of War 2, when you go back to it, not very different gameplay wise to God of War 1. So I think it's just all about what they nail in the story.
Yeah. But see, that brings me back to Doom Eternal, where Doom's 2016 I thought was one of the best games that year, one of the best first person shooter campaigns of the generation, and did so much to reinvigorate Doom. Doom Eternal felt like kind of what we're describing, or what you described there, Barrett, with, oh yeah, you know, same gameplay setup with a few more layers. And I don't think Doom Eternal really set the world on fire, no pun intended, in the way that Doom 2016
did. Does Doom Eternal have character work and writing?
And I hear you, right? I'm talking more gameplay stuff, right? This isn't me talking about God of War 2 is not going to have great character stuff. But in the gameplay sense, right, I do want to see big leaps there and like big stuff they do there. I don't know, like, it might be me picking it apart, just to pick it apart, but I want to be like shocked. I want to be in awe of this game when I play it, right? I want to be blown away by it.
Yeah,
I guess that's where I'm at.
That worries me, Bless. It worries me because I'm hoping. I hope you are. But we won't have to wait too long to find out, because it is coming out in just a few short months. But moving on to story number two. CD Projekt is revealing what's next for Cyberpunk 2077 next week. This also comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. CD Projekt has said it plans to reveal what's next for Cyberpunk during a live stream on September 6th. The special episode of its Night City Wire live stream will take place next Tuesday at 8 a.m. It will also include new information on Netflix's upcoming Cyberpunk Edgerunners anime series. CD Projekt claimed in April that Cyberpunk 2077 had sold over 18 million copies since December 2020. It also said it's working on a major expansion featuring a new storyline. Now, Netflix confirmed this week that Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which is animated by Studio Trigger, will be released on September 13th. Bless, I know we've talked a lot about Cyberpunk over the years. You were the one that reviewed it for us at Kind of Funny. You enjoyed the game, right? And yeah. I would say more than a lot of people did it in the initial run of it all. And you played on PC. There's a lot of factors there as well. But is there anything they could do that can get you excited and want to go back?
I think it'll be a slow journey to get them back there. Them finally releasing the new gen versions of the game earlier in the year, I think, is one of those steps, right? Where now you can buy the game on consoles and not have it be unplayable in the way that it was at original release when it came out on PS4 and Xbox One, right? I think that right there is step one, right? Like, all the small updates that they've been putting out over the years has been part of that step. I do think a new expansion, if they market it the right way, if it looks interesting, if it looks like a new vibe, it could get me back in. I would be down to play some Cyberpunk DLC if they put out a banger. And I think that's what they might have to do at this upcoming stream. I would love to see them reveal some DLC content. And Bear, if you're able to pull back up the trailer, one of the things I noticed, because of course the Cyberpunk Edgerunners, the anime that they're releasing soon on Netflix, like, if you go to about 14 seconds into this trailer, they have game footage of like Edgerunner shit, right? I believe it's the main character they're playing as right there with the Edgerunner jacket on. So that seems like new content, and that could be just a minor thing of, oh, here's an update where you can get Edgerunner gear. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what it is, if it's something that small. But I think it could also be as big as, yeah, here's a big DLC expansion that might integrate with what's going on with the Edgerunners anime. I think that could be a cool thing. I think that could be helpful to get a new wave of people in. If the plan is put out Edgerunners, hopefully there's an audience there that loves it and appreciates it, and it's a hit, cool. That audience then goes, oh man, Cyberpunk seems cool, let me check it out. And if you have an Edgerunners expansion waiting for them at some point, that could, I think you could build synergy there to have those things play off of each other. But for me, I'm somebody who I am willing to give it another chance, right? I'm willing to jump back in. Cause like you said, Tim, I liked it when I played it. Again, very rough around the edges, very like a lot of bugs, all that stuff. But it's a lot of stuff that they've had time to iron out. And I'm not checked up with it recently to see how much of the bugs are still there. But I would figure that the game at this point must play better than it did at launch.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This is clear that they're even saying this, but like this is a event that's happening to kind of promote the Edgerunners anime. And they're also like, oh, we'll give some updates on the game stuff. So I wonder how substantial the game stuff is actually going to be, or what they're even ready to show, able to talk about and all of that. But what is interesting is the landscape of the kind of cross-media situation with these IPs that we're seeing nowadays, with what the movies and TVs and video games and all of it and how they all interact. And CD Projekt Red already knows the power of that, having The Witcher, right? Where The Witcher came out on Netflix, and even if The Witcher wasn't necessarily based on the games, based on the books, it did boost the hell out of the game sales, right? Yep. And kind of created a new moment for The Witcher game that was already a massive hit, but then it just gave it a spike years later. I expect that a similar thing will happen here with Cyberpunk. I think it's going to be different in a lot of different respects. Obviously, I don't think that anime on Netflix is going to have the same level of general mainstream interest that a Henry Cavill-led live-action, high-budget show would. But I do think that Netflix is going to push it, and they do have the X factor of it being Studio Trigger, which they have a flawless track record as far as I know, and as a layman to anime, I would say, it's like, I know that they're a big deal, and I know that there's excitement around that. So you take Cyberpunk, which, if anything, is dope as hell style-wise, and you apply it to one of the most stylish, dope anime studios that exists, that's a potential win, right? Yeah. So if you get an audience that likes that, especially when you're on a platform that already has had major wins in the animated video game department in the forms of Castlevania and Arcane, this could really work. And if this works, they better have a nice translation, a nice, easy, smooth transition from, hey, you're liking this? Go play Cyberpunk. And I think that you catching the Edgerunners jacket and stuff, it's like, that's an easy way to just to be like, oh yeah, you get to use some of the things you see in the show in the game. Also, we have this big expansion coming, and it's going to be really exciting. That could be cool, and it could get people hooked.
Yeah, 100%. I think the comparisons with things like Castlevania and things like Arcane are apt, right? Where I'm right there with you in terms of the Witcher TV show comes through. It has Henry Cavill, right? It has it gets in an audience that a lot of them did not play the Witcher game, but they still appreciated it because at its core, right, it is, hey, here's an adaptation of the Witcher novel series, and you don't have to know the game to enjoy the Netflix show, right? Because at the end of the day, it's unrelated, but you play it or you watch it and you go, oh man, a lot of people do like this Witcher 3 game. Maybe I should check that thing out. Arcane is another one where watching Arcane, I'm somebody who, I'm not into League, I'm not into MOBAs, but I am into fighting games. And Arcane has piqued my interest in something like Project L, right? Because Riot has done such a good job of connecting those dots of, cool, we have many, we're trying to build in more points of interest for players to come in, right? So whether it is something like League or something like Valorant or something like Project L, right? If we're able to share that universe between that and things like Arcane, then we get to build this bigger fan base that cares about multiple of these iterations. I think as CD Projekt Red, there's connective tissue that you can connect there to make people go, oh, okay, cool. Like, this anime is good. Maybe I'll check out the game, right? Or maybe they already own the game. One of the things that stick out to me from this article is the fact that CD Projekt Red has sold, or they claimed that in April, Cyberpunk 2077 had sold over 18 million copies. A lot of people have their hands on the Cyberpunk 2077, whether they like it or not, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people have that game. If a good portion of that audience watches the anime and goes, oh man, I'm kind of craving, you know, the experience again. Let me go jump back into the game and play it. And you have the Edgerunners gear. You have maybe a game that runs better since the last time you played it. Maybe you then stick around, or maybe you pay more attention to the expansion. I think that's the plan. And I think that might be a good way to go about it.
Yep, absolutely. Remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to get the show ad free. But speaking of ads, let me tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like checking in your baggage at the airport without a lock. You don't know who's looking through all your stuff, finding all of your Nintendo Switches, your PlayStation Vitas, or all the other things that you're hiding in there. When you go online without a VPN, internet service providers, ISPs, can see every single website you visit. They can legally sell this information without your consent. Nobody wants that. That sounds like a bad time for everybody. You can browse more anonymously. It's easy to use and it works on all devices. I love ExpressVPN. It is super simple to use. I feel safe across all of my devices, knowing that whether I'm on my desktop or my mobile phone, people aren't getting in there. I'm safe on the internet, and what I look at, what I browse, that's mine. That's for me to know. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/kindoffunny today. That's expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/kindoffunny. Next up, shout out to Chime. Like a cool breeze, Chime is a refreshing way to handle your money. There's no monthly fees, no maintenance fees, and no minimum balance fees. So it's how banking should be done. And when you need access to your money, you can do so fee-free at more than 60,000 in-network ATMs at many locations like most Walgreens or 7-Elevens. You can also send money to anyone, even if they aren't on Chime. Fee-free for you and no cash-out fees for them. Chime, no monthly fees, no vibe-killing fees. Sign up for a Chime checking account. It only takes 2 minutes, and it doesn't affect your credit score. You can get started at chime.com/kfgames. That's chime.com/kfgames. Chime is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by a debit card issued by the Bancorp Bank or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal fees apply, except at MoneyPass ATM in a 7-Eleven location and at all Allpoint or Visa Plus Alliance ATM. Other fees such as third-party and cash deposit fees may apply. Chime.com/KFGames.
Story number three. Praise director thought using that name was a mistake. This comes from Zach Swisen at Kotaku. Prey 2017 is a very good game. One of my favorites from that year, in fact. Yet its name always seemed weird. It has no connection to the 2006 Prey or its never released sequel. Now, in a new interview, the director of the game has explained how Bethesda assigned the name Prey to the game and how he felt it was a mistake. He believes that the name was a bad marketing decision and one which may have doomed the game to fail. Colantonio is the founder of Arcane Studios and also the writer and director behind 2017's best immersive sim, Prey. Colantonio left Arcane shortly after Prey 2017 was released, and since then he's made mention of how he didn't want to use the title for Arcane's game. And now, while appearing on the AIAS Game Maker's Notebook podcast, he's revealed even more details about the situation and his frustration with the name that he claims was forced onto the studio, saying he was at odds with Bethesda. Quote, "I did not want to call this game Prey, and I had to say I wanted to anyway in front of journalists," he told AIAS in the podcast. "I hate to lie. It felt bad to support a message I did not want." He continued saying that it wasn't just him that felt this way, but that he claims many others at Arcane felt the same way too. And while he was grateful that a company gave him the means and time to make a game and trusted him to make something like Prey, he was still frustrated by the name. Our game had nothing to do with Prey. There is a bit of the artistic creative side that's insulted when you tell an artist, you know your game, it's going to be called Prey. And you go like, I don't think it should. I think it's a mistake. He then said that he believed calling it Prey was a sales mistake because choosing the name backfired as fans weren't happy and the people who didn't like the original unrelated Prey didn't even look for the game. As for the original Prey and the team behind the game, he felt bad that they had used the name and IP, feeling like it was a kick to the face to the devs behind 2006 Prey. I wanted to apologize to them many, many times. I didn't really have a chance because I didn't know those people. It was never our intention to steal their IP and make it ours. It's gross, and that's not what I wanted to do.
That's heartbreaking, man, because Prey is an underrated gem. I played that game right after Deathloop because I was in that arcane mode, and playing Prey, I was struck with confusion as to why more people don't talk about Prey and how fantastic the game is. And I think part of that might have been, I think it was a bit rough around launch. I remember people experiencing game-breaking bugs, even during, I think during the IGN review, that was one of the things that came up. And so the Metacritic wasn't, I think, as incredible as it could have been in the game if the game came out in a perfect mode. And I also, when I first picked up Prey last year, I started playing it on, I think, PS5, and the frame rate wasn't it. And then I picked it up on Xbox Series X where it had FPS boost, and I was like, oh, here we go. Like, this is the ideal way to play the game right here. And playing it that way was such a cool way to play it. And I feel for, the Cole Antonio here talking, right, in the team who might not have been messing with the name that much. Because on one hand, I can get being Bethesda and being like, hey, we have this dope-ass trademark for the title Prey for a game, and we're not using it. And, like, that's a dope-ass title for a video game. Just Prey? Prey? Oh, that's a fucking fire name. Hey, you name your game Prey. On one hand, like, yeah, I get that side. But on the other side, yeah, no, Cole Antonio here is totally right, right? I think that name did that game such a disservice. Because, one, it doesn't really make sense for what the game is about. You aren't a predator. Like, there's no prey in that game. I guess, like, you could argue that you're being hunted down by these fucking aliens, but aside from that, that name doesn't really make sense for that game. And then to the Cole Antonio's point as well, right? Having something that was already called Prey that has this cult following of fans that are going to see this new announcement for this new game that is entirely unrelated, not the same universe, not the same. Nobody was thinking about that other game when they were developing this game. Having that then take over that IP, as a fan, you go, well, no, this isn't what I want. I wanted the Prey 2 that was announced back in the day that ended up getting canceled with the really cool trailer, right? That's what I want. And that fan base would start to resent the new game, right? And then on the other hand, I'm somebody who never played the original Prey. I don't have any connection to the original Prey. And so I see a new Prey announced and I go, oh, it looks interesting, but I'm not a Prey fan, right? I think those are the two things that you're battling with in terms of audience responses. And yeah, I think that does do such a disservice to the game. So it's unfortunate that they weren't able to call it something new or give it whatever other dope name they would have wanted to give the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you absolutely nailed it. And it's like, this, I think it's cool that we get stories like this coming out later, where it's like we get the realities of situations on podcasts. The Game Maker's Notebook is a great, great show that people should definitely check out, because there's always like fun little tidbits like this that kind of like show the real side of things. And, you know, I think this story is really just evidence that there are so many people that work on these games and so many decisions that are made that affect each other in a multitude of ways that sometimes aren't cohesive and sometimes don't make sense and upset people, and rightfully so. And I feel like we'll never know what this game could have been if it was named something else. We'll never know all the
that's the other thing is like, you can't, you know, A, B scenario, something like this, where we look into the different timeline where it was called, I don't know, man, Aliens in Space, whatever the fuck else you would call it. You know, we don't know what that timeline looks like. Maybe it performs the exact same, which is very possible. But yeah, I think this is an example of like decisions that are made purely out of marketing purposes aren't always going to hit, right? And like, oftentimes I think audiences can be unpredictable in that way, where you might look at something as Bethesda and go, no, trust us, if you call your game Prey, it's gonna be sick, right? It's a great name, it's one word, it's short, it's memorable, it's all these things. Like, this is the best name for your game, and you do it and it turns out, oh no, it didn't do anything for the game. You could have called it whatever, and if you called it something else, maybe it would have performed better. It's like headlining KFGD, where it's, you know, 100%. Now for the last month, you know, I've been producing the show, and so I headline all the episodes, and there are like half the days where I go into Slack and I DM Greg or I DM Roger because he does thumbnail, and I'm like, hey, I have these 2 to 3 headlines. Which one do you think is going to hit? And it is like, all right, like for this episode, for example, do we headline it God of War gameplay or do we headline it Cyberpunk, right? Like, which one of those is trending? What is the conversation we have more? And it's such a tough decision to come down on those kind of things.
I mean, plus the headline for this episode was Cyberpunk 2077 event announced. Can it come back? Question mark.
Yeah.
And that was what it said. And then I was looking at the views and they were lower than they have been for the rest of this week for our live concurrence. And I asked Barrett, I was like, can you change it to the other one? He changed it to the other one. We boosted up 400 views almost immediately when that happened.
Yeah.
These are things that happen, y'all. Like this, there's like, and it's like, we don't know. And people are just trying their best to figure things out and trying to like actually accurately reflect the content and get it out there. And I'm sure that the marketing team over at Bethesda thought they were making the right moves. And the thing is, they didn't. At the end of the day, it's like the game did not perform well, despite people there being a cult following for Prey 2017. Oh, yeah. But again, it's like a lot of different things. I think that having said all of that, what it comes down to is Colantonio there didn't want this, and he was the like driving creative force of it. I feel like that is unfortunate, and there's no other way to look at that, right? Like that sucks for him and the team of people that didn't want their project to be called something, and it had to be called that. Like that sucks.
It's unfortunate, yeah.
Just Jeremy Spinks in the chat saying Prey 2017 GG Tim. Did I say something wrong? My bad if I did. Moving on to story number 4. The Quarry director says his next game will be just as big and could deviate from teen horror, from Andy Robinson at BGC. The director of Until Dawn and The Quarry has revealed he's working on another full-scale horror title, which is tentatively planned for release by 2026. Supermassive is known for its branching narrative adventures within the horror genre. Over the past decade, the BAFTA-winning UK studio has released both larger games, Until Dawn and The Quarry, and a series of smaller episodic titles underneath the Dark Pictures banner. Speaking to VGC in a recent interview, the studio director who directed both Supermassive's larger horror games confirmed it was his intention to continue creating full-scale narrative adventures with the same genre. I do like the luxury of being able to really explore characters, and you get that with a longer story. It annoys some people because they get bored with it, but I really like the fact you can go in depth with the characters and explore relationships in a way that's harder on a shorter story. Specifically discussing his next project, he said it would be equivalent in size to The Quarry, which was published by 2K, and suggested it could deviate from the teen horror explored in his last two releases. We've started working on the next game. I can't really tell you very much at all, but we've started. Again, it's the same sort of horror genre. We're sticking to that. It's equivalent in size to The Quarry, and that's about as much as I can say without giving too much away. Potentially, we might be a little bit like, I don't know how far we can stretch the teen horror thing out further, because especially when we try to stir it up, the number of surprises you can add to that becomes limited. The Dark Pictures explores hundreds of variants of the horror genre. What we're looking at now, and I can't tell you exactly what it is a bit of a diversion away from that sort of standard, but it's still very much classic horror.
Hell yeah.
Interesting. What could it be?
I mean, when I look at the Dark Pictures anthology, I think they've done a decent job of trying to vary things up a little bit. Like, Supermassive, I feel like a lot of their games comes down to, oh man, there are big beasts out there in the wild, and they're trying to hunt you, and you didn't know there were big beasts until the last third of the game, except for, actually, I won't spoil anything. But like, you know, I think as we go further with Supermassive games, you've seen them vary a little bit. You know, like Little Hope wasn't that, right? Man of Medan had a twist. And of course, like Little Hope and Man of Medan, I don't think hit in the ways that we wanted them to hit. But you do see some variances there. And now Devil in Me is their next game that's coming up. I believe it's coming out in November. And I'm really excited to see what that is, because the premise of that one is a way more of a Saw scenario. Right, where it is a serial killer is making you do a bunch of shit, right? And you got to figure out like how you're gonna get out of the scenario or not get out of the scenario. That seems like a fucking hype as hell type of game for Supermassive to make, and I like that they're branching out a little bit. And as much as I like The Quarry, one of the things that I felt toward the end of The Quarry was, okay, yeah, we've been here before with Supermassive, right? Like, we were here a bit with Until Dawn. We were here with some of their other games, right? They've made this kind of game before, and I like that kind of game. I think that kind of game is fun, but I also think that kind of game is predictable, especially where it is that thing of anyone can live or die, right? Like, all Supermassive games have the same premise and same gameplay premise, which we love and we adore, but I think it kind of limits them in narrative scope a little bit. So I think being able to go, actually, we're not going to do just the straight up campy teen horror that we've been doing and that we're known for. We're going to try and find a different way or a different subgenre or something to lean into. I think that might allow their storytelling chops to feel a little bit more fresh as opposed to doing another Until Dawn or another The Quarry.
Yeah. Really cool stuff. I love that they're making these games. I think they're very special and they're unique, you know, in a world that has so many of very similar video games, and we see different groups rarely try brand new things. Like, I love that they have kind of found this little niche to themselves where they're able to have these story narrative based games that don't feel like Telltale games, don't feel like other episodic type things that we've seen like that, but have their own thing, especially in the horror genre.
And they've been hitting the yearly cadence. I've been very impressed with Supermassive with Dark Pictures, even though, again, not all the Dark Pictures are great. The fact that they're able to hit them yearly, I think, one, is impressive, but then also have The Quarry come out earlier, which was a bigger scope, right? Was more of an Until Dawn, the Until Dawn follow-up that we all wanted. I think that is really cool, and I think they're getting better as they're going. So them coming out and being open and transparent with, yeah, we're working on our next big game like The Quarry, and it's going to be maybe 2025 or 2026 till it hits. But in the meantime, we're probably going to get Dark Pictures games. They're finding a flow. Like, they're finding a cadence that at first was worrying me when we got Man of Medan and we got Little Hope, and they weren't setting the world on fire. But now I'm like, oh shoot, I'm excited for the next Dark Pictures thing. I'm excited for this bigger project. They're coming into their own in a way that I think is rare to see for a developer of their size and doing such a unique thing to get, right? Because video game development is hard, and it's so easy to fuck up and not get the sales numbers and then not get the support. The fact that they're not only staying afloat, but seems like now they're doing pretty well and have a clear vision for what that studio is. You go get them, that's Supermassive.
Absolutely. Story number five, Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family Plan has been officially confirmed. This comes from Kat Bailey at IGN. Microsoft's finally revealed the long-rumored Xbox Game Pass Friends and Family Plan just days after a logo leak all but confirmed the new subscription tier. They announced that the new plan, which will allow subscribers to share with up to four other friends or family members, is being tested in Ireland and Colombia. Members will gain all of the usual benefits of Game Pass Ultimate, which includes cloud streaming and a rotation of games. While pricing details haven't been revealed in the U.S., it figures to roughly $10 more than the current Xbox Game Pass Ultimate plan, which is currently $15. The plan will allow users to share the cost among multiple people, making it a boon for college students who are now just returning to the dorms. In addition to initial pricing details, they also released an FAQ detailing how the service works and how it will work across different regions. It's also confirmed that users can only be a member of one group at a time, and that group members can only join a group up to two times per year. The Friends and Family plan is not yet available in US, UK, or Europe, but should be revealed in those regions relatively soon. Hell yeah. Fantastic stuff, man. Really damn cool.
Yeah, I love to see this confirmed. Of course, this was leaked earlier in the week, and it sounds like everybody's happy about this. You know, Paris Lilly was the person who I want to say I heard banging the drum on this the most since he's joined XCast, right, talking about how great a Friends and Family plan would be. And it's really cool to see Microsoft continue to make those good choices, right? Make those good PR moves, make those, what's the phrase we use? User-friendly decisions. You know, like, this is great. This is I think this is going to be useful for a lot of people, and it seems like a great deal. And I even think about, you know, the fact that in the article they mentioned, you know, like, this would be great going into the school season, right, for people in college and to be able to share that with their friends. I think, you know, as much as with family plans, we often think that, oh, yeah, these companies hate when people do that, right? You look at Netflix and they're trying to fight against that. The fact that Xbox is embracing it and literally calling it the Friends and Family plan, hell yeah. Like, that, those are the kinds of things we love to see. And so, yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah, the Friends bit, I think, is huge, and I think is very telling of the state of where we're at now and how these subscription-based services are looking at the data and looking at the wins and misses of competitors. And competitors at this point are any subscription-based digital product, right? So it's like even video games are competing with movies and TV shows and all that. That's just the way it works because it's entertainment dollars at the end of the day, especially with these recurring charges and things like that. So Xbox is, you know, built, continuing to build the foundation, man. It's a impressive thing to see what they're pulling off over there.
Would it surprise you if I told you I'm still paying for the Nintendo expansion pack just for my lonesome, myself?
The Nintendo Switch Online family situation and everyone's takes on it is one of the things that bothers me the most in life, and it's people like you, Bless.
I don't even use that. That's the worst part about it.
I just hate it.
How often do I play Nintendo Online?
Bless, like, you sound like Mike right now. That's how concerning this is.
And I probably sound like Janet Garcia, too, who pays for PlayStation Plus and never uses it. Like, yeah. I'm one of those people now, right? I'm making it rain in the Nintendo offices, right? Like, Doug Bowser is, like, doing a jig and, like, getting dollar bills rain down on him. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yeah, now give me my Switch, and I'm going to just set it over here and not use it and pick up my Steam Deck and play Immortality. I should be playing so much Smash Online, but online fucking sucks.
Fair.
And the Nintendo Switch 64 catalog could be way better.
Could it? What are you missing? Really, Bless? Are you going to sit here complain about it?
Donkey
what are
you Kong mad 64.
That you don't have? Thank oh, you, where Bless. Is
it? Story where number is Donkey six. Kong? Story number six, Skyrim Anniversary Edition has been rated for Switch, so now you can play that again, Bless. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. Looks like Elder Scrolls V Skyrim Anniversary Edition may finally be coming to Switch after the game was reportedly rated in Taiwan earlier this year. It's been now classified in Europe, too. As spotted by Nintendo PAL, the game's been rated by PEGI, which for some reason listed as releasing for Nintendo's console on August 31st, 2022. Announced last August, the latest Skyrim remaster was released for everything else in November 2021 to coincide with the RPG's 10th anniversary. If the title's coming to Switch, it could be confirmed this month during an unannounced but anticipated Nintendo Direct presentation. Jesus Christ.
So impressive how they'll find new ways to release Skyrim. Because for a second during this news story, I was like, oh, is Skyrim really not on the Switch? And then I was like, no, I remember that Link costume from Breath of the Wild that looked terrible that they put into Skyrim. Do you remember that, Tim?
Oh, of course I do.
Oh, the nightmare of a costume that they added for Skyrim on the Switch. The fact that they're finding ways, seemingly, right? Of course, this is a leak. This is unconfirmed, all that stuff. But it makes sense, right? Like, yeah, we got the 10th anniversary, the Skyrim Special Edition that came out on Next Gen. Let's just sneak that onto the Switch, man. Let's just sneak that on. The funny thing with the date, right, being August 31st, which is obviously a placeholder. What if it was already on there? And, like, we just didn't know. Like, Bethesda just stuck it on there.
Literally nobody fucking gave a shit.
Yeah, nobody cared enough about the next Skyrim release on Switch for the second time that, like, nobody just noticed. We're just like, oh, yeah, this must have been the old one. Good for you, Skyrim.
Good finding for you, ways Skyrim. To release. Also, somebody
in chat did mention that Splatoon 3 comes out next week for the Switch, and so there you go. Right, I've been paying how much? $15 a month for Switch Online. I'm finally gonna get my money's worth playing a game for 2 weeks.
Yep. Splitgate. Final story here. Splitgate's ending future development. I gotta say, I'm a little surprised about this. This comes from Splitgate on Twitter. To our Splitgate fans, we could not be here without your support. We pride ourselves on trying to be as community-focused as possible. We strive to improve our game and build a better future for Splitgate because of the enthusiasm of our fans. Thank you. Splitgate achieved a level of success that we could not have anticipated and that few indie games are fortunate to reach. That initial success brought an opportunity to turn what started as a college dorm dream project into a AAA game that could stand toe-to-toe with shooters from the biggest publishers in the industry. But this also meant that as we brought on top-tier talent from across the industry, we spent a lot of our time trying to rework old content and systems that were originally built by a handful of people. We are, in a way, bailing water while also trying to keep everyone who bought a ticket to board our ship happy, while also trying to turn our boat into a rocket ship. After careful consideration and much deliberation, the 1047 Games team has determined that in order to build the game fans deserve and to build it in a way that isn't trying to retrofit and live operate an existing product, we're ending feature development of Splitgate. We're turning our attention away from iterative, smaller updates and going all in to focus on a new game in the Splitgate universe, which will present revolutionary, not evolutionary, changes to our game. It will be a shooter, it will have portals, and it will be built in Unreal 5. Oh, and it will be free. We understand many of you will be disappointed and have a lot of questions. We want to be clear that Splitgate will remain online, as will your items and progression. In fact, we will roll out a new battle pass on September 15th. It'll be free to everyone as a thank you for playing Splitgate. Game support will continue, and there will be smaller updates and fixes to Splitgate, but the bulk of our focus will be on an entirely new shooter that we can't wait to share with you. This is a see you soon and not a farewell, the 1047 Games team.
This hurts my soul so much because Splitgate was fire and they released at possibly the worst time ever. They put out a game that was essentially, you know, a Halo clone with portals only a couple months before Halo Infinite came out. And that first month, we were having so much fun with Splitgate. Like, I think the game was very impressive, or the game has been very impressive, right? It's really fun to play. It, you know, scratches that itch that you have for Halo. But then I think when Halo Infinite comes out, so much of us transitioned to that, and I think maybe got burnt out, especially because they talked about it yesterday, right? Or you guys talked about it yesterday in terms of Halo Infinite's post-launch, I think saw a lot of people drop off because the post-launch just hasn't been it for Halo Infinite. And I think at that point, people forget about Splitgate, right? Like, I don't think people then drop off of Halo Infinite to then go play Splitgate. I think people drop off of Halo Infinite to go, all right, maybe I'll play Apex or Warzone or, like, Forza or, like, whatever other game. And so
Skyrim.
Skyrim for the 19th time. Yeah, and so, like, I think you probably saw people drop off of Splitgate and then those numbers not make it back, and then them go, ah, well, shit, right? Like, we built this thing, we're updating this thing. And from what I've seen, they've been doing a good job of the updates, right? Like, every single time I see an update, I'm like, oh, man, I just play Splitgate again, and then I don't, and so I'm part of the problem. But it hurts my heart that, like, yeah, they're just like, yeah, we can't keep this up. Like, we don't have the support we need to keep this going. I do think them making a new game is exciting, and I do think that's going to be beneficial with it being an Unreal Engine 5, because one of the things about Splitgate is that it's not a pretty game, you know? Like, I think they make do with what they can. It doesn't look bad by any means, but when you play it, it does feel like something from a, like, almost like a previous gen, right? It feels a bit older, and I think that's just a smaller team that is working on it. But I think them transitioning into Unreal 5, making something that is, again, from the ground up, but is carrying the lineage of Splitgate with the portals, with the fun shooting, with all that stuff, it's probably the best decision for them. You know, it's probably a decision that they're having to make, and are probably like, ah, shit, all right, well, this is going to be what's best in the long run, even though for now it probably hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, honestly, I admire and I respect this message and their commitment to it. And it shows that the team has vision, and it shows that the team has an understanding of their team and of their product and of their community, and that they don't want to squander this, and they don't want to do what feels right in the moment. They want to do what's right for the future and longevity of the game and the community. So, you know, it's unfortunate. There's sad things about this, but I think overall this is the right step. And I think that they are making a bold choice here, and it's going to upset people in a lot of people, but I think that at the end of the day, it is the right call for them. So good on them. But bless the successor to Splitgate. It's probably so far away. If I don't know what's coming to mom and grub shops today, where would I look?
You would look toward the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Do 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 do, yeah.
Out today, we got JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle R on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC.
We have Lego. That's a game that I previewed at Summer Games Fest, and I thought it was fine. But, like, I have a fighting game Discord with people that are, like, in the press and stuff. And a couple people have been talking about JoJo's, and they're like, it's pretty all right. It's a pretty all right fighting game. So if that's your jam, I think it might be worth checking out.
If you're into pretty all right fighting games, go for it. Yeah. Next up, we have Lego Brawls on pretty much everything. We also played this at Summer Game Fest, and I cannot recommend it.
Yeah, no.
Pretty much anybody. It was not good.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was not a good time.
Made in Abyss, Binary Star Falling into Darkness. Okay. PS4, Switch, and PC. Last of Us Part 1 on PlayStation 5. Lunistis on PC and Nintendo Switch, and Hank's 101 Trivia on mobile.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Right now, if you're watching on video, Barrett showing footage of Lego Brawls.
I did not know this game existed.
I don't think anybody did.
So it's a mobile game that they, like, ported essentially to consoles, and I feel like that should say a lot.
I was very surprised when I saw the booth, and I was like, Lego Brawls, is that a new, oh man, it's a brawl type of game. I was like, Smash Brothers, oh yeah, let's check this out. And it just
It's just not.
It played like butt. It was not good.
It did play like butt. And you could also be the Raptors from Jurassic World. New dates. Cat Maze comes to Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PS5 on September 9th. 6v6 pirate arcade game, Plunder Panic, releases on September 16th. Mario Kart Tour is getting an update on October 5th, which will add a new battle mode and remove gacha mechanics. Deals of the day, 2K's original Mafia games currently available as a free download on Steam until September 5th. So cool. Go check that out. Now let's check out You're Wrong. Let's see what we got wrong live. Wow. Legit nothing. Not even, yeah. we didn't even get a submission. This was from yesterday. This one here. This might be the first time I've ever. Yeah, that the Grafifi was announced yesterday. The graffiti Pokemon. My brother's really, really, really excited about
it. Oh, shit. But, okay, that actually makes it sound cool. I just assumed it was a giraffe.
Yeah, no, it's a dope looking little lemur guy. But anyways, this might be the first time I've ever been on Games Daily that no one even submitted it. You're wrong. So bless. We're pretty damn flawless.
I mean, what does that mean that it's possibly broken? do we need to refresh a million times?
Well, impossible. Someone in the chat also points out that Nano isn't here today. So,
you know, that makes a lot of sense.
Got it. Next week's host, Monday, we're off, baby. Tuesday, Greg and Blessing. Wednesday, Greg and Jeff Gerstmann.
Whoa.
Thursday, Greg and this motherfucker right here. And Friday, me and Greg Miller. If you're watching live on Twitch after this, it's Mike and Greg playing a little bit of Rumbleverse. So check that out on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. But if you want to catch it later, you can watch it on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. We like to give everybody options. It's great. This has been Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of Patreon or above. So stick around for that. Until next time, I love you all. Goodbye. Go support Blessed D23 next week. It's going to be awesome.